Depicts real archaeology. It's raining, it's cold, it's wet. People argue. So it's just, it's not an Indiana, it's not glamorising it. It's what, literally, that is what I remember on an archaeological dig, what it was like.
If it was maybe a little bit leaner and didn't have those weird age choices, I think it might tell its story a bit better.
Some of the lines are really funny. CJ, I think his name is.
Kevin Scott, isn't it?
He says to Basil, he said, you know, it's got to be in the British Museum. Got to persuade her. And Basil's like, you're asking me? He said, do you want some lemon drizzle cake? Like, it's just so
it's
good.
Quite refreshing. Hey everyone, and welcome to Flix Watcher Podcast. Today I'm joined by Liz.
Hello.
Michelle.
Hi.
And Helen.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about The Dig.
Thank you, as always, to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod. And on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to FlixWatcher Podcast. Our guests today are Liz and Michelle. Over to you, please, Michelle, to say hello to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Well, hi. Thank you so much for having me on, along with Liz. I am a voice actor by trade. That's what I actually get paid for. Been a voice actor for about 16 years now. Most of my clients are abroad, do a lot of corporate work, audiobooks, narrations and so on. And I am the co-host. I'm one half of Two Women Chatting. And we started our podcast last year. It came from outside talking in the garden when I met her as a new neighbour. And it kind of developed into this sort of, it's a podcast for midlife women, really, and empty nesters. And we both found ourselves to be in the same position and had lots of chats in the garden. We eventually moved inside when conditions allowed through COVID, and we sort of had our podcast sofa. And it's been a year of such fun and such education and depth, and it's our passion project has sort of become a lot more. We're now downloaded in 44 countries, and we get incredible feedback from our listeners because we touch on topics that I think are very relevant to us and to our family and our friends. And it's not all menopause related. That is important, but it is not all menopause. But we talk about coercion, late diagnosis, ADHD, modern slavery, all kinds of things. So
and you guys, so you're neighbours then, by the fact you met in the garden.
So yes, we are neighbours. Yeah, Liz is my friendly neighbour who, after I'd moved in about a week or so, she came up and started chatting to me and realised I always kept a bottle of wine in the fridge, and we became firm friends.
Is that the first thing you check, Liz? Do you have wine, and is it available for me to consume?
Yeah, and we both had dogs, and we were within easy access of each other's houses. So, yeah, match made in heaven, really.
Is there anything else you want to add to that? Give us, you know, your postcode, Liz.
Oh, no, you don't.
Definitely not. We're south, I suppose that's the only way we're going to say.
South. That's A-OK. That's A-OK. I listened to a couple of episodes, including Anthea Turner, talking about, I think she was talking about her book, but also the, you know, the different steps that she's gone through, HRT, for example. So it's always good to hear different perspectives, and that's why podcasting is great, because
I'll tell you what, that's been a really fun part this year, that we started off sort of nervous. I mean, we are completely unknown midlife women, and we gradually stalked people and gradually got, you know, really good names. Started off with Jenny Seagrove, and then Anthea Turner agreed to come on. And, you know, now when we contact people, they generally say yes, which has come as this delightful surprise to both of us that these experts and celebrities are willing to take a bit of a leap of faith and talk about things that are really interesting, whether it's, you know, whether it's their book or a topic that they're involved with. You know, we're talking to Linda Magistris tomorrow, actually, about grief And we do try and delve a little deep. But we also try and find a sense of humour about almost every topic where relevant that we can. So we really do have a good laugh, don't we, Liz?
We do.
And you said
mostly
Michelle,
we have a good laugh at Liz's expense, actually.
That's what I was going to say. Nobody is.
You said there about delving deep, Michelle, and that does segue us to the film which you've chosen, Liz, which is The Dig. Can you tell us, first of all, why you chose it? Everyone's shaking their heads, guys, at me of that tenuous segue, but I took it. I'm sorry.
I think it's good.
Tell us first of all why you chose it, and then I'll give you a timer in which you'll have 60 seconds or less or fewer to give us a synopsis.
I chose The Dig because I studied archaeology at university.
Oh, wow.
Yep. And I'll tell you exactly why. It's the first film I've ever seen that depicts archaeology as I remember it. Basically, the film reimagines the excavations of the most famous archaeological discovery in England.
Okay.
Sutton Hoo in Suffolk.
Oh, sorry, you're going into the synopsis. I'm going to get the timer. 1 second.
Just 1 second, that's a bit short.
And the timer starts now.
Okay. Well, the film, it reimagines the excavations of the famous archaeological discovery in England at Sutton Hoo in Suffolk, just before the outbreak of World War II. Kerry Mulligan plays widow Edith Pretty, who is curious about what lays beneath the earth mounds of her property, and hires a local excavator, Basil Brown, played by Ralph Fiennes, to excavate them. When he uncovers the outline of a ship, archaeologists from Cambridge descend on the site, and the film follows the stories of the main characters and the tensions between them. In particular, it focuses on the characters of Edith and Basil and the young archaeologist Peggy Piggott and Edith's cousin Rory. Lily James plays Peggy, who is the aunt of John Preston, author of the novel that is the film is adapted.
Okay.
It takes a few liberties with the truth, but it's inspired by real events and people.
Lovely.
Very nice.
And I hate doing that.
It's difficult. It is difficult. So, Michelle, have you seen it before? Have you heard of The Dig before? Have you seen the film?
I have seen it before, and I rewatched it, actually, obviously, to try and, you know, get up to speed with the topics that it covers. Yeah, it's a really, I mean, I think it's a really excellent film, underrated by a lot of critics, actually.
I was going to say it is underrated.
It came out on Netflix. I think it went straight to Netflix. So it's one of those kind of hidden ones whereby I don't think, if it wasn't for the cast, and we'll talk about the cast here soon, but Kerry Mulligan, Ralph Fiennes, Johnny Flynn, Lily James, there's a couple of other people in there who I thought quite...
Ben Chaplin,
yeah. But the cast there does really stand out, and I think it does elevate the story in the film. And this is a story I knew nothing about. So, I mean, just hand back to yourself, Liz, about the archaeology side of things. First of all, did you know the story about the Sutton Hoo uncoverings as an archaeology student? And tell us a bit about how you've seen archaeology represented in TV and film, if it isn't Time Team or Indiana Jones.
I was going to say, the point about this film is it actually, one, I had to study Sutton Hoo. It was one of the first topics or areas I had to study. And I'll be honest, it was a bit boring when I was 18 studying it. But years later, you know, I started reading up, and it is amazing what happened there. But I think why I like the film is it depicts, as I said, real archaeology. It's raining, it's cold, it's wet. You know, people argue that happens. So it's not an Indiana Jones. It's not glamorising it. It's what, literally, that is what I remember on an archaeological dig, what it was like.
So how long would you be out there on a study trip? How long would you be in a place? And what, how to beg the question, what was the most interesting thing, quote unquote, that you found?
Me, not a lot. I didn't pursue archaeology as a career.
Didn't find anything.
I went into the events business. But... no, it's really good fun, but you have to really be passionate and patient. Mm. And that's not me. I might be passionate, but I'm not patient. You have to be there for, it's literally days and days, sort of just feeling away with the soil, which they talk about, you know, how he feels the soil and understands it. I didn't get that. I just used to just charge my way through, get it over and done with, and got told off for it. But it's you have to be, as I said, very passionate about archaeology. I studied ancient history as well, which I was interested in. I do love, you know, watching that film brought it all back to me.
It's interesting. Did the ancient history kind of tie in with the archaeology at all, or was it kind of two different parts of the brain?
Well, the first question they, or essay I had to write when I was studying, was, is archaeology science or an art? And I'd gone, well, obviously an art, but it's actually very scientific archaeology, even back in the 80s. And I think the ancient history, I probably was more interested in even when I started. Mm. I thought I was going to be going to, you know, Greece, Italy, Egypt, nice hot places. I went to Hadrian's Wall. Not quite the same in Scotland. Little bit chilly, little bit wet, and wasn't for me. But that's what you saw in the film. You had, you know, boiling hot weather, freezing cold weather, raining. You had to be out in the middle of the night covering up the site with the tarpaulin. Yeah. That was all true. And all I discovered was a flint.
At least you found something.
Yeah.
True. But you know, but I was saying that represents, the film does represent archaeology, to me at least.
And what about yourself, Helen? Had you seen this before?
Yeah, so I think I probably saw this when it came onto Netflix as we were still in lockdown style. And it was one of those that people were talking about and it was like, oh, we might as well watch it.
Well, I think we were all thrilled to get some new material, weren't we? Because at that time, there weren't many films being made. And when they did crop up, you're like, oh, thank goodness, there's a new film to watch.
We try to say that nobody watched it otherwise.
I think that's
my passion.
Probably it. The premise is not really kind of like my usual go-to film. I mean, I enjoyed it. I think it's a fine film, but I think that it really does kind of like push its two-hour run length a bit. I think they managed to stretch out something. And I think for me, I probably would have liked to have seen more of them digging up and a bit more understanding of what they dug up and what it was, because not knowing so much about that period or like what it was they were digging up or kind of the significance of it, I was a bit like, oh, I should dig in some up.
I'm glad you said that.
When he pulled out that coin, for example, and this is Basil Brown saying, oh, this is a blah, 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 blah coin. And the imam said, no, it's not. And then he's like, oh, yes, it is. This means it's Anglo-Saxon. And I was like, what?
Is that good? Just happened in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But it was that was the mistake.
Everyone seemed super happy with the fact it's Anglo-Saxon rather than Viking. I was just like, well, it's still hundreds of years old, I'm sure. But it was, you know, I was kind of caught up in the excitement of it. And there was a fair bit of romance in the kind of uncovering a gold thing. But I think like Helen said, I think they could have made a bit more about why that's interesting. Like the Iron Rivet, for example. Why is that an interesting point? You know, we know who went to Ipswich Museum at the moment's notice to say, I found a rivet. So we knew it was kind of important, but also we didn't know what the significance of it was. So I think things like that would have been quite nice to kind of eke out and tease out a bit more.
I agree. That was one of my complaints is they played on the characters and that bit isn't true about the romance between Peggy and Rory. He didn't exist.
Right.
The photographers are actually women in real life that, you know.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I agree. I was shouting out that, you know, why do they not explain why the reason for this? Basically, it was explaining, because it was Anglo-Saxon, it was saying that England wasn't in the Dark Ages as long as they thought, you know, after the Romans came, it meant the Anglo-Saxons were civilised and could make art and create stuff like that. That's really the basis of it.
They should have had you as an advisor and then you could have gone, hang on, we need to explain this. Yeah, just we need to give a bit of context.
Carry the threads,
yeah.
let people on board. Yeah, well, I was interested in that. So it's interesting to see the romance wasn't there, especially as it kind of comes out of what seems like a closeted relationship that kind of goes awry and or you know meets a natural end, which is something which I thought was really quite interesting to present at the cusp of World War II. Those kind of storylines we wouldn't have heard of more that frequently, apart from maybe Alan Turing and his side of things. So I thought, I was like, oh, I wonder if that is an element of truth when you just kind of
not that.
That way, unfortunately. No,
but what is interesting is that there was two comments that I picked up on. Maybe it's just because I'm that type of person, because of my mother as well, about university. Edith wasn't allowed to go to university because her father said no, because she was a woman. And Basil couldn't go to university because he came from the wrong background. So it is quite a real discrimination in those days. And, you know, he wasn't a professional archaeologist. whilst, you know, the bigwigs that came down from Cambridge were. So it was real snobbishness and elitism in those days. You know, in my day, it was very elitist. I guess that's why, again, I like the film, because it did depict what I experienced as, the, you know, the little girl on site, bit the same as Peggy. She was young. She, you know, she was experienced archaeologist when she was on that dig. She wasn't a brand new, you know, newlywed.
And I think what I liked about how the story is played in this, at least, was that it's pretty did defend Basil Brown, you know, and wanted him to be there, even though the dig had kind of grown bigger than she thought it was going to be, or unexpectedly. But she still fought for Basil, and she did, at least, and as the story says, want him to be credited, even though that didn't happen as she wanted it to happen. In my cursory bit of research, I saw that, I mean, Carey Mulligan is presented as being like maybe late 30s, early 40s. But in real life, she was late 50s, and she had Robert when she was like her late 40s, which I think is quite late for that. Well, for the pre-war Britain. So I thought that was, when I was thinking about it, I was like, I really like Carey Mulligan, but I think it would have been interesting to present, to have a different actor taking on that role and just represent that a bit more truthfully, I guess.
Yeah. I wonder why they made that casting choice. Was it because they wanted the star name in Carey Mulligan, or a younger person that might appeal to a younger audience, or what it was? Because there's plenty of older actresses that could have taken that part and been brilliant in it.
Mm.
Nicole Kidman was supposedly meant to do it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, but she couldn't take the part. She was busy. Yeah, that's what I'd heard. Because Carey Mulligan is too young. I mean, she's a great actress, but, you know, far too young.
And also, that's not the only one. Ralph Fiennes as well. Brown was 50, so he was younger than Pretty. And Ralph Fiennes is 58. So there's kind of like a weird thing going on there. And also, Stuart and Peggy, their ages are quite different as well, because Stuart was 29 and Peggy was 27, so they were quite close. But in the film, Ben Chaplin is like 51 and Lily is 31. So there's all the way through the casting, there's like super weird age choices. And I think that takes away a little bit of the story, because I think part of the story is that there's this woman in her 50s who makes this discovery, and it just kind of feels like that is a story that needs to be told, rather than we're kind of watching it and it's like, oh, a woman in her 30s kind of makes a discovery. That seems like something, you know, quite normal, whereas taking away that part of Pretty's identity is like taking away quite a lot. And it's just a bit like, you could have at least cast someone a little bit older, or I don't know, change the timing so that it kind of worked. I don't know. Obviously, they wouldn't do that. But I felt that when you play around with ages, and in the way that is that significant gap, when you're talking about real people, you are taking away a significant amount of their identity, because a 30-year-old and a 50-year-old have very different experiences and they're perceived by people in very different ways.
I think a woman in her 50s would have had a lot more gravitas and believability that she could stand up to the authorities and forge her own path. And, you know, she's a fabulous actor, Carey Mulligan, but, you know, she's so tiny and pinched and sad looking and young and frail.
She just do sad very well. She's always
sad. She does sad excellently, doesn't she?
She apparently did look similar to Edith. Maybe that was the reason they cast her. Her face is similar.
I heard when the film came out and I was like, oh, this sounds like a film that might be worth watching at some point, but I was never kind of drawn to it. So when he chose it, Liz, I was like, okay, yeah, I'll watch it. It sounds good. I'll get around to watching with a reason. And I genuinely quite enjoyed it. I think I was kind of taken away with the whole romance of it and uncovering coins, which I can't name, and I really like Ralph Fiennes in this. I thought he was a really kind of endearing character, and the relationship with his wife, I thought, was quite interesting. And it seemed like he was trying to angle, and this is perhaps going back to the age differences, but it seemed like he was trying to angle towards a potential romance between Pretty and Brown, or some kind of more than kinship, but which might have made sense with an older actor playing Edith Pretty. But as a setup, as the setup was set up now, I was like, it's not going to happen. I don't know where they're going at. And to the extent that his wife in this seemed to think that he might be angling at that, but also didn't think it was going to happen. There's a weird kind of muddled bit there. But anyway, I like Ralph Fiennes in this. I thought it was great. That's my.
It seemed they were desperate to try and add like this kind of like fake dramas to everything and bring in more drama. Mm. And it was like, but the dig is the drama. Like, you know, that is the things that were happening, and they could have sort of fleshed out that a little bit more to bring in the drama rather than like making up romances or trying to insinuate different romances were going on. It's like, it doesn't have, like, I'm guessing this film was probably sort of aimed at women, and they probably went, oh, we need some romances in there to get people into. No, like,
tick a box.
Yeah, you don't. Like, you just need to develop your story and characters. You don't need to fudge in some kind of fake romance, especially when it's, you know, we can all Google and use Wikipedia and go, well, that didn't happen, did it?
I think one thing I thought was really interesting, and I didn't fact check this at all, is how close to the onset of World War II or England's, UK's involvement in World War II. But obviously we've seen how wars and turmoils happened, most recently with the war in Ukraine with Russia, and seeing how that's kind of played out. I was really interested to see how they announced World War II happening. And I was like, holy shit, this is actually, it does give it a sense of like a time and a place. Did you guys check on the reality or fact behind that at all, or how close it was?
It was asked 2 years before to start, because it wasn't, you know, the type that he was looking at those mounds 2 years before, but they actually discovered it in 39, the main, the ship, you know, and the gold coin. And then that's why they had to cover it up and put the treasures they found in the British Museum, because she sold them, she gave them to the British Museum, which is a very generous gift. I think it's the biggest, I don't know if it still is, but I remember reading that it was the biggest gift from anything from a find in England. She could have made a lot of money out of it, but she didn't. But that was 39, and they hid them in the underground station during the war. So I wish they could have played on things that a bit more, I'd have thought. They could have extended the story and made a bit more of a war film, which could have been interest to more people.
Well, we had that fallen fighter pilot, didn't we? And that kind of came out of nowhere. I don't know. Is there anything else we want to say, guys, before we head to the scores?
Well, I was just going to say that I did enjoy it. And I actually, you know how movies so much these days are very fast-paced. You've got to get to the action. You've got to go through the plot. You've got to get the characters. I kind of liked the deliberate slowness, and it sort of wallowed in its pace in a little bit, because it had gorgeous cinematography of Suffolk, and there was a lot of sort of repression and dealing with all kinds of relationships, working relationships, family relationships, secret relationships. So obviously all the sort of things that they alluded to there between the looks across the room or across the dig and things like that. And I did think some of the subplots were a bit forced. I didn't think you needed all of that. And I did think it was a little bit long. And if they'd removed some of that subplot, I think it would have been like a perfect amount of film length, and it would have kept me hooked all the way through anyway. But I think some of the lines were really funny. You know, when they were celebrating at the house, and CJ, I think his name is.
Kevin Scott, isn't it?
Yeah, he goes, he says to Basil, he said, you know, it's got to be in the British Museum. It's got to be in the British Museum. You've got to persuade her. And Basil's like, you're asking me to persuade her? He said, do you want some lemon drizzle cake?
It's quite refreshing.
It is. Oh, and I also want to mention what I think was a really beautiful scene. And we haven't mentioned the young boy who plays her son.
Robert. Yeah.
Robert, who Liz told me today, he's actually an American actor. But I thought some of those scenes between him and Basil were really beautifully done, where he clearly was looking for a father figure and looking, you know, to be told he's doing the right thing. And, you know, Basil surprisingly says, no, you're going to fail. We all fail. We all fail every day. And sometimes you just have to accept that there's failure. And I think, you know, when the three of them were together and they were looking at the stars, and, you know, Basil had told the boy, you know, you've got to kind of grow up and just show your mum that you can cope with all this. And I thought that was a really gorgeous scene where, you know, the young boy is explaining that in his fantasy, the queen is in the ship and she goes off to the stars, but then she turns around and eventually looks down and she sees her young boy as a man who has coped with everything that she has left behind. And he's taking this really adult role in some ways to reassure his mother, who knows she's going to die soon. And I just thought that was a really nuanced, really layered, beautiful performance, actually.
Yeah, and again, I don't know if that's a real or a fabrication, but that's the kind of story that's, if it's a fabrication, I quite appreciate it, because it's not the kind of stories we see, you know, in every single film, like a forced romance story or that kind of thing. So that was, I really appreciated that as well. And also there's the, Basil seemed to be, appreciate obviously Robert's time as well. There seemed to be some unwritten reason why they didn't have a child between his wife and them. So I think Basil did see upon him as like a youth he could at least impart knowledge on. Liz, you're going to say something?
No, I was just saying, I'm delighted that at least it's, you know, showing archaeology to a new generation or even to yourselves. You wouldn't have watched it. You've learned a little bit more about archaeology. I think it's important that people do know about it. It's not the most exciting subject, lots of people think, but...
Well, we forget that at the start of Jurassic Park, there's an archaeological dig where they uncover a Velociraptor claw. So that's, I mean, it can be...
Things go differently in that film. But, I mean, no spoilers, but... Yeah. It's not used for good.
Oh, I think there was one other thing I was going to say, was that with regard to that time and that sort of deliberately slow pace, I felt a real sense of urgency when the RAF planes were flying overhead and you knew that they're going to have to try and get this dig really to a point before the war started, because then all the manpower would be off at war and it would literally grind to a halt. And I think they portrayed that quite well as well, that they, you know, they wanted to get this through. And then, you know, there's Basil still doing his job and covering it with, you know, foliage and then protecting it from the elements. So I think, you know, that was nice change of pace, actually. Nice, urgent call.
Well, awesome. Well, guys, let's head to the scores.
I'm Sam Clements, host of the 90 Minutes or Less Film Festival, another podcast in the Stripped Media family, a podcast that celebrates movies under 90 minutes long. Each episode, I'm joined by a special guest who selects a movie to join our prestigious lineup. Past guests have included fellow Stripped Media family members Martin and Sam from Song by Song, and Kobe from Flixwatcher, and Dave from The Wire Stripped. Search for us now on the app you're currently listening to this podcast, or join us at 90minfilmfest.com.
So welcome to the Flixwatcher scores. All of the scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish. And we will start with you, please, Liz, with your recommendability.
Oh, that's a difficult one. I'd say 4.
Any particular reason why?
Because it's not, you know, a particular person would like to see it. I'm not saying it's for everyone. And as Michelle was saying, it is quite slow and it's very enjoyable. But I'm probably a little bit biased, so I can't say that it is for everyone. And if you know, if somebody paid good money to see it, they might be disappointed.
So it's perfect for Netflix, you're saying. Well, we'll get onto the small screen score, perhaps that leads into it. Michelle, what your recommendability?
Well, I would give it a 3.5. And the reason I would give it that rather than a 4.5 is that I think it will only appeal to a certain part of the population. It might appeal to women in their 50s who run a podcast, for example. But it wouldn't necessarily appeal to my kids in their 20s, because it's not fast-paced, it's not got effects, it's not got like a lot of dynamism. But as Liz said, how nice it is that, you know, it's showing archaeology to potentially another generation. So 3.5 from me.
Helen?
I think this is a very, very solid 3 for me. I think I would struggle to find people to recommend it to. And I think the length would probably be a little bit off-putting, plus the kind of subject, which I think is a shame, because if it was maybe a little bit leaner and didn't have those weird age choices, I think it might tell its story a bit better. I think it's perfectly enjoyable to watch, but I think given everyone involved and sort of the historical significance, I was maybe expecting it to be a bit more, I don't know, something was missing for me to go, I know this is kind of like a little bit obscure, but go for it. Whereas I'm a bit like, you know, it's fine, it's nice. Kind of like Sunday afternoon-ish, if you kind of like the actors involved.
So, yeah, Midsummer Murders and then all this. I'm going to go for 3.8, mainly because I underestimated it based on the storyline when someone told it to me. So I'd probably give a bit more and say, yeah, I think, you know, it's probably better than you think it's going to be. and I like everyone involved in it. Like I said, Lily James through to Karen Mulligan. It's not a fun film, I was going to say, but it did have me engaged at the start because I knew nothing about it. I didn't know it was real until the end. I thought it was a fabricated kind of story they put together. And I guess the one bit that kind of pulls you in at the start is the fact when like Basil gets covered under the soil. I didn't manage to check if that was a real thing that happened, but it did warn them. It did say about, you know, keep away from, there's no supports yet. It's dangerous. Repeat viewing score, Liz.
I would have to say probably 3, I'll be honest.
That's not bad.
Is it not bad? Oh, because I'd watch it again because I think I'd learn more, or you know, remember what I'd studied a long time ago. Watching it the first time, it brought back a lot of memories. I'm not sure. It's not one certainly straight away to watch. I might watch it again, but maybe in 5 years' time, somebody might watch it again. That would be my choice.
Michelle.
I agree actually with what Liz is saying. And for me, I've seen it a couple of times. I doubt I'll watch it again now. I think I'm going to go for a 2.5, and that's not because I don't like the film. It's just that it's a long time out of your life to keep repeating.
That's the first time everyone's put it that way, and I like it.
It's 2 hours you won't get back.
I think that's perfectly encapsulated. A rewatch of a film.
About archaeology, of course, which is a long time scale.
Helen,
they could have done some like.
It's your second time watching it, right?
Yeah, it is. I wasn't going to rewatch it because I probably saw it about a year ago, and then I thought, can I remember it well enough? And I kind of put it on and I had it on in the background, but I wasn't 100% sort of honestly like paying attention. I was a bit like, I probably would have been all right. It is a bit long, which I think is a shame. I'll go for a 2.5 as well, down the middle.
I'm going to go for 1.8. I'm not sure when I'll watch it again, but what I would like to see is a documentary about the uncoverings, about the dig. I think I'll be really quite interested in that. So that's what I'll probably go and research, and hopefully they can shed some light as to who was involved and their ages properly. Small screen score, Liz.
Ooh, in the sense I don't think it's made for small screen. That's the problem. I haven't seen it on the big screen though. The point is I haven't seen it on the big screen, but just seeing that you know, the setting, it just lends itself to be on a big screen.
Sure.
Because, you know, the size of the ship wasn't really represented. It's a big, big ship. So for small screen, 2.5.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, and I think this is why the documentary will be quite interesting, because I had no idea how big these mounds were. They looked like small kind of hillocks. And I was like, well, can you not just dig that out in a day? What's wrong with you? So it would be good to get a size, an idea of the scale. I'm not sure if it's on a cinema, we would have got a better idea of the scale and size of things, but I think there's something there that they could have pulled out. I guess this is going back to the archaeology versus romance side of things. So sorry, 2.5 is your score. Michelle.
Couldn't agree more with the sense of scale. I mean, I know it was made for the small screen, but they didn't even put things around or it didn't give me a frame of reference for how big that boat was, that ship. And I wanted that. I wanted that kind of enormity. And I think it was born for the big screen, not the small screen. And, you know, being Netflix, it's obviously going to be a fairly small screen unless you've got a nice big projection room at home. So I'm going to go for a 2.
Helen?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember whether this one was one that was meant to have a cinema release and then kind of didn't.
Yeah, because, I mean, during lockdown, things just got shunted even though they had a potential cinema release. So, yeah, I'm not sure there's a straightforward answer to that.
Because I probably would not have seen this at the cinema. It definitely wouldn't have been one I would have made the effort to go and see. So I think for me, that even though it did kind of have those, it's obviously a film that has been made to be kind of viewed as you would do with films, I think it's fine for watching on Netflix. And I would even say that, you know, if you were ever on the fence about watching it because you can watch it at home, then that's something that is something you can do with it being on Netflix. So I'm going to give it a 5.
Yeah, I think it works really well for the small screen, apart from the fact there was no frame of reference. And as we all know from archaeological dig pictures, you need to have like a 50 pence piece next to something.
Or a big reference. Like zoom out. They could have got a big shot. And...
Oh yeah, definitely. Like or a car next to the mound or things like that. I mean, they had the hut, but it made it look
like
the mounds were actually quite small. Yeah. I'm not sure it does convey like the enormity of this feat that happened. So I think it works quite well. Maybe a slight change in cinematography would have helped, but yeah, 4.5 I reckon for me. Engagement score, Liz.
Well, I'm obviously biased, I think, with my background. So for me, I wouldn't have turned off. But if I'm recommending for other people or I'm recommending for myself, for me, it's definitely a 5 because once I knew what, you know, it was on, I'd have watched it. That's it. But to me, it was lovely. I couldn't believe, I'd not seen it before. That was the point, believe it or not.
Okay. Oh, is this your first time watching it?
No, I'd seen it. I'd seen it, but I hadn't seen it. You know, I only saw it a few months ago, not, you know, at the very beginning when it came out. I don't know how I missed it. So when this was out, you know, asked, I was like, oh, fantastic. I know the film.
Michelle?
I enjoyed it and it kept me engaged all the way through. I liked the journey that I went on with it. I felt fully engaged with it. I wanted to know if Edith died. I wanted to know if they found the treasure. I wanted to know if any of these repressed feelings would be reciprocated and relationships would change. So yeah, I was engaged right to the end, actually. So I would give it, I'll give it a 4.5.
Helen?
I'm going to go a little bit lower. My impatience kind of took the better of me and I had to see who was real and do a little bit of like, so what was this dig? Where was this dig and this museum and thingy? So I was doing a little bit of my own research to kind of fill in a little bit of the gaps, which is obviously very naughty when you should be giving films your full attention. So for that, a 3.5.
I'm going to go for 4. I didn't know where it was going to go at all as a film. So that kept me through and it always kind of depresses me. I think there's a point you made there, Michelle, about was Edith going to die? Not that, you know, you're egging for it to happen on screen, but also that was kind of the direction it was going and for it to end just as a nameplate, like Edith died X many years afterwards after donating to the British Museum. I always feel kind of slighted by that kind of ending to a film. So it's a bit annoying. But, you know, it got me there through to the end. So that gives us an overall score of 3.44375. It's all right. Well, let's head over to Twitter. And thank you, guys, first of all, for listening to the podcast. But do follow us on Twitter for as long as it exists. We are at FlixWatcherPod. And good reason to follow us is because we obviously talk about Netflix films and films in general. But before going into record, we ask for your opinions and your thoughts. Look out for a tweet saying something similar to this. We're reviewing The Dig with Liz and Michelle from at Chatting2, aka Two Women Chatting. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and your score out of 5 stars for an on-air shout-out on this here podcast. We had one response. Michelle, I think, do you have it?
Yeah, I've got it in front of me. Thanks to Lee Thomas, at LeeThomas5, who said, great production and performances, especially a low-key Ralph Fiennes. The film is fine. Watch it on a Sunday afternoon after Columbo, which I think we all pretty much agreed with, didn't we? He's giving it a 3-star for the A plot and 1-star for the B plot that he's now got no memory of.
I did ask for clarification because I wasn't sure if it was a 4-star overall, but he clarified, no, an aggressively 3-star film. So he's multiplying the stars rather than adding them together. Sure, do what you want. Thank you very much, Lee, a frequent contributor to this. Liz and Michelle, can you sign off by telling everyone where we can find you guys online, reminders of your podcast, and we'll say goodbye to everyone who's listening.
Yeah, well, thanks for having us on. You can find us, Two Women Chatting. We're on every podcast platform that you can think of. You can find us on our website at www.twowomenchatting.com, on Instagram at Two Women Chatting, on Twitter at Chatting Two. Follow us, review us, rate us. We would love to have more listeners, and come join our community.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on.
Bye.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.